Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Skin looks amazing.
Oh, thanks. Okay. You look great.
Do I?
Yeah, you
look great. I think it's all the very helpful lighting you've set up.
Well, I'm looking directly at your face. Oh, well, still. Okay. So for this episode, I realised that Julie's listeners now are going to hear me talking an intro in her podcast, but we decided to do a crossover podcast. So for my listeners, the shift is usually dating relationships, sex, and then sometimes it's just a chat, sometimes we totally just go off on a totally different, but that's generally the team. And so for obviously Julie, your podcast is usually, do you want to intro it for?
So Crimeland, which Katie has been on before and has been a great guest, is essentially looking at historical true crime. So I invite a different funny person on every week and I tell them a historical true crime story. So because The Shift is kind of a relationship podcast, Katie, you had the really good idea of doing a crossover, but we look at a historical true crime which involves a bit of romance.
A bit of romance, a bit of dating, a good warning for us all. I actually don't know what it's about yet, so.
But I think, you know, a lot of these stories, I don't know what it says about love, but like when you were saying, oh, would you have one, you know, written up that involves a bit of romance? To be honest, I think they nearly always involve,
yeah,
something romantic.
Yeah.
Like, some kind of like love relationship gone sour. Like it's such a fine line between love and murder is what I'm saying.
It's so true. Remember what you said to me the other day? Oh, so obviously Julie's in New York. She's here for Irish comedy show and staying with me. And we were talking about how, and I'm pretty sure this is you, but I also had just spent the day with a theater, so I'm getting confused who said this to me, but I think it was you. And I was saying about how most women actually get murdered or assaulted or attacked by someone they know.
Oh, for
sure.
There's
like a statistic. And was it you who said, I'm blanking now what I was just about to say, but was it you who said, that men say that they're terrified a woman will laugh at them. And there was this wasn't you.
No, so I think Joanne used to have a bit about this. Was didn't it? She, Joanne McNally?
Well, it's apparently like a, I actually...
Is this, you know, the bit about like men have a fear when you show up for a date that you're going to have a bit of muffin top, and women have a fear they're going to turn up and they're going to get murdered.
No, but that's
that
great.
That was a Joanne McNally bit.
No, there's an actual study like where they questioned, what's it called when you mass study, question women?
A survey?
Thank you, God. How have I been doing this podcast without you? My vocab's terrible.
Not at all.
But no, seriously though, there was a survey and it was like, what were women's biggest fear when it comes to men versus men's biggest fear? And men's biggest fear was they're afraid women would laugh at them, and women's was they're afraid men would murder them.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Like, so obviously like men don't even think about about that, whereas women, like, you're thinking about it, and it's funny, you're probably thinking about it walking down the street, like you're walking down a quiet street. I put up a Instagram video once of my old street in Astoria, and it was all alleyway, 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 big white van, big white van, big white van, and I was like walking in the middle, and I was like,
so scary.
But, and you know, but realistically, probably more likely to get murdered by Leland. He's so lovely, he's not gonna do it, but you know what I mean.
I was wondering, like, I didn't want to say, but I did find a document that Leland has, I mean, look, I didn't read the whole thing, but the vibe I got from the first paragraph is he has taken out a life insurance policy on you. Typical. Which is always a red flag.
Massive.
Because I feel like that's a real American thing, you know, when you hear these horrific stories about people being murdered by their spouse, there's always like they had recently taken out a life insurance policy. Can you even get life insurance in Ireland? Like, is it a thing?
I don't know. Like, in Ireland, we don't have
any. I don't know if we value ourselves enough to take out an insurance policy on ourselves.
I think they'd be like, ah, stop, will you? Even the insurance people would be like, no.
Well, I did a gig in Scotland with the brilliant Liam Farrelly, who's a fantastic comedian. Like, he really is. He reminds me of kind of like a young Kevin Bridges. Frankie Boyle, he's so, so good. He's from Glasgow. But I was at a show with him, and he was talking about having a child recently. And he was like, I mean, he was on stage and he was like, guys, I didn't even have a life insurance policy. And the audience were all laughing. And then he came off stage and I was like, should I get a life insurance policy? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's all a bit mental. Like, I'm about to get cat insurance for the cat, and that's going to be more than my own health insurance a month.
What? No way. Yeah, as in, like, just for vet bills and stuff?
Apparently it doesn't even cover, none of them even cover your vet visit. It's just for, like, which is mental to me. But if anything happens to the cat, that's so expensive in New York City to get any sort of, like, operation. Now, look, I would be of the mind that, you know, if something happened.
Don't say you can just get a new cat.
No,
Mantra,
I can't. No, I love
is
Mantra.
Here for a lot. Yeah,
but I would have been of the mind before, like, oh, if the cat gets sick, like, you know, that's bad, and mm-hmm. they die. But now that I have Mantra, I'm like, no, I would probably spend the
of
money
course.
To get it fixed. And it's like, my friend had a cat where it ate a piece of string, so it was stuck out of its mouth and it was stuck out of its arse, so it was stuck in
what?
Its yeah, like the string,
as in one end out the other. That's like human centipede stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. So to get it out, like, and it was twisting up his insides, it cost him $8,000 because he didn't have pet insurance. Whereas if you had pet insurance, they'd probably foot the bill for maybe $6,000 of it, you know?
$8,000?
Yeah.
Jeez, I would have pulled that bit of string out of the arse myself for $8,000. My God.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you love your cat, but, like, honestly, like, if it was $8,000 for yourself, you'd be finding it hard to pull the money to get yourself fixed. You know, sort
of. Honestly, if I had a bit of string hanging out of my arse, I have a bit of string hanging out of my fanny every month.
Yeah, but it's not coming out of your mouth as well.
Well, depends on the month. Okay, it's very easy. By the way, beware of toxic shock syndrome. Is a big
that's what
thing.
This cat was having.
You need to really be conscious of the strings hanging out of your body. Is what I'm saying. Even though I had this conversation with somebody recently who was that very brave celebrity who came out recently and talked about toxic shock syndrome, Maura Higgins. I don't know if you know Maura.
Yeah, I love Maura.
Of course, fellow Longford head. But she was talking about how, and I was so happy she came out to talk about this. Well, I mean, we love Maura anyway, but she was saying about how, like, a tampon had been stuck up her vagina or whatever, and obviously she was getting sick and feeling unwell, and thankfully they got it in time, because, you know, obviously toxic shock syndrome is actually such an acute illness and so serious. But I was so happy she came out to talk about it, because it is a bit stigmatized.
How did it get stuck up in her? She just kind of forgot.
Well, you know yourself, it's like, you know, you can forget. Like, it's never happened to me personally, but it has happened to a lot of friends of mine, and I can easily see how it would happen. So, you know what I'm saying is, you need to watch the string situation, but also it's completely understandable if one gets a little bit waylaid.
100%, especially if you've been drinking. The next morning you're waking up being like, I don't remember if I actually took it out, or is it all
yeah,
the way
well,
up there?
One morning, because I don't drink a lot anymore, but one morning when I was on the lash, one night when I was on the lash, the next morning, like, it is always very alarming when you reach down, there's two strings. You're like, this is wrong. Like a puppeteer.
Yeah, it's hard. It's
like
hard
a
being
puppet
a woman.
On a yeah, we have to, string.
We have to worry about strings and being murdered.
Do you remember that Eurovision song, Puppet on a String?
No, I had no idea
it's
what you're
such
singing.
A classic. In fact, tonight at her New York comedy gig, I want to come on to that song. I want you to find it and I want that to be my walk-on song.
I have to disappoint you and say we have no walk-on music.
Okay.
In New York.
Nobody said that before I booked the return flight. I want like a WWF entrance.
Do you know what I'll do? I'll learn the words
like a
and when you're, I'll sing it. Like a puppet. No.
String. And it's a very breathy kind of a vocal.
And instead of clapping, I'll get the audience to throw tampons at you.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah. Well, as long, I mean, you are paying me $8,000 for the gig tonight, yeah, so that seems only fair. So I'm very excited about the old Shift Crimeland.
Yes, this is exciting.
Marriage.
So you said you had an historical romance, true crime.
I thought
crime.
You were writing up a historical true crime story.
Well, so Mary Antoinette, she said to have cake and I don't know what happened with her fella. But
and that's the end of the podcast. Can we just say as well, because we both love the old true crime, we happened upon the best bookshop ever yesterday.
Yeah, mystery bookshop in, I guess it would be like Lower West Side, even though I there's not, it's down near Ground Zero.
But it's all mystery, true crime, thriller books. Like, it, honestly, I couldn't get over it. I can't believe a bookshop like that exists.
I know. No, it's amazing.
Such a joy.
I love those type of books as well because they're usually like, you can kind of dissociate where it's like, well, this isn't real. Sometimes when I'm watching stuff that's like I had to turn off the Jeffrey Dahmer documentary.
I didn't watch it.
It was making me feel sick. Mm. I watched the Ted Bundy one, but I wanted to do a crime podcast and nobody steal this idea because I might do it one day when I stop being such a scary baby. I'll tell you what it was. I wanted to do a true crime. So, because there's an app here where you can see all the crime in your local area.
Oh, stop it.
So I thought it'd be fun. It was not fun.
No.
When I downloaded the app, I was fucking terrified to leave my house. I was getting a notification like someone was shot 10 feet away from your location. I was like, I can't even, how could I even make that funny?
Well, I have to say, I don't know how I slept the other night when you were telling me about people crawling down from the roof, crawling in the window to rob the place. I was like, night night to you too, Katie. My
yeah,
God.
That was in the 90s. I was saying to Julie that, so we live in Chelsea now, it's very nice and it is an area that like would be predominantly known for having maybe gay men live in there in the area. So his sometimes I forget to breathe. Leland's uncle, who he rent off, lives with his husband now. But there was all these like big bars on the window, and I was like, it feels like we're in a prison. Like, let's get rid of them. But then Leland told him, and he was like, well, when I moved in, people would. It wasn't a like safe area the way it is now, because obviously
it's such a lovely area now.
Yeah, all the men made it so much safer and stuff like that, like the gay men. But he said that people would crawl. They would crawl up. Come out from the roof and crawl down or crawl up the fire escape to try to break into places,
which is really reassuring, isn't it?
Well, then I was like, fuck, we've already taken the bars off, so I don't know, like I just hope. But then Leland was like, nobody's gonna be scaling the building now in Chelsea.
No, and to be fair, like, we have Mantra now to protect us.
Yeah, little. He already protected us from the fucking camera. Trying to bite through a bunch of cords.
Well, do you know what? Yeah.
Am I allowed to curse on your podcast?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, go for it. Drop those F-bombs,
I
baby.
I love a good F-bomb.
Okay, will I dive right in?
Do it.
Okay, so, right. Okay, I'm wondering, because usually when I do the crime, I'm like, this week we're chatting about whatever. So this week I have one written up for you. I think you're really going to enjoy it. This is the story of Martha Heslop. Okay, I'm going to just dive right in. So Martha Heslop, so basically she was born in Elstree in England in 1746 and she was the daughter of a dressmaker. So at age 13, she went into an apprenticeship as a milliner, which, would you be a hat person? You strike me as someone, I'd say you're into hats, are you?
No, I hate the feeling of them on my head. I also think my head's like slightly bigger than the average hat size.
Really?
I don't know, it just feels a bit
tight. You have a lovely sized head.
Thanks.
So Martha, basically, she was the daughter of a dressmaker, you know, I guess kind of dare, like, you know, she was kind of a lower class, shall we say. So like she was very much kind of coming from kind of a working class background. And at age 13, she start this apprenticeship, which would have been obviously du jour for people of her class within this era. So she was tipping away, making her hats and doing her thing, when one day Martha came to the attention of John Montagu, the 4th Earl of Sandwich. Is this ringing any bells?
The 4th Earl of Sandwich.
Yes.
Sandwich like. So she's making hats and he's eating sandwiches.
Well, because do you know this story about where sandwich actually originated? So this guy.
Are we talking about a sandwich with ham and lettuce and
tomato? We certainly are. So this guy, which I don't know if you'd heard this story before. So this guy would have invented the sandwich, essentially, right, as we know it, like the modern day sandwich. Oh, my apologies. Okay. So I had Martha Hessop in one source for the name of this woman, but actually it was Martha Ray seemed to be the one that was more commonly used. So we're going to go with Martha Ray. Perfect. Okay. Obviously, the research here is impeccable, because I was thinking to myself, I have this. So what I do is I amalgamate different sources. I should probably quote a couple of them actually now. So Murderpedia. We always use Murderpedia, generally speaking, for the historical stuff that we do. Wikipedia was another great one. But I did use a really brilliant article from the Watford Observer as well, written by Paul Heslop, Anne Nobelt, and Archibald Thompson Hall, which are all very impressive names. I'm sure we'd all agree. So in that article, she was referred to as Martha Hessop, but I didn't actually see that in any other source. So in every other source, including the Smithsonian, which was, they had a fantastic article on this. So if you do like a long read, it's like really well written, very literary. And on the Smithsonian, they continue to refer to her as Ray. So actually going forward, I'm going to refer to her as Martha Ray. Is that okay?
That's perfect. Can we just come back to Murderpedia?
The sandwich. Okay, Murderpedia. Wait,
Murderpedia sounds like someone who would like jack off to murder.
Yes. Well, I tell you, Murderpedia is great because it's essentially a Wikipedia for murderers. Wow, okay. And they amalgamate all these different newspaper articles and sources. And I actually find it brilliant, especially for the older stuff, because it literally is just a catalogue of like newspaper articles on different murders.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's great. I use it an awful lot. So this guy, John Montagu, he invented the sandwich. And the story apparently was that he didn't want to leave his gaming room. He was quite a social butterfly. And he got his poor old servants to basically take his supper and put it between two slices of bread so that he could eat it at the gaming table, and the rest is history. So he invented the sandwich. So this guy, John Montagu, Mr. Sandwich, he was kind of a big deal. So he would go on to hold the position of First Lord of the Admiralty, which was like, you know, it was a big position. He was very much at the pinnacle of 18th century aristocracy and a really powerful guy. So Martha was about 16, and Lord Sandwich happened upon Martha one day when she was at work, and he was instantly besotted with Martha. So, by the way, just doing the maths on this, he was 44 at the time, and she was 16.
Of course,
says you. So it's the age-old story. So Lord Sandwich was a married man who'd been living apart from his wife for 7 years due to her deteriorating mental health. So she'd actually been declared insane, which, let's face it, probably just means PMS.
All the listeners are going to be like, oh my god, can I get, she coughed into, we're not allowed to cough
it's
anymore.
Over.
But wait, you said that his wife was declared insane.
Yeah, so he was married and his wife had been declared insane. But like,
double tamponed it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like, I definitely know, yeah.
I mean, he declared her insane because he got a crush on the 16-year-old.
I mean, she could have, you know, maybe she did have mental health problems. But I think, you know, we all know, like, any of us who've read, like, Jane Eyre, Mad Woman in the Attic and all that kind of crack. Like, I mean, I would take it with a pinch of salt as well, because obviously we can't diagnose people that many years ago. But also, when it came to women and mental health, like whatever about men and mental health, it was just, you know, it was a little bit dodgy. It was, you know, it's, I don't know. But like, look, according to the sources I had read, she did have severe mental health problems. So maybe the poor woman did have like a lot of stuff going on. But basically, they still technically were married, you know, as such. But she was deemed, I guess, not a competent spouse. So Lord Sandwich took a real shining to Martha, and he took it upon himself to see that Martha received a good end education. So he sent her to France, where she would learn to, quote, be a lady. Mm. So, you know, they had these finishing schools back in the day, and that was where you went to basically learn etiquette and social graces. So she went to this one in France, and there she also did. So with these schools, essentially, it was like learning how to be a lady. And, you know, as I said, etiquette and stuff. But they would also get them to do kind of, quote, ladylike things. Like they would coach them in terms of singing. They would get them to play like a nice musical instrument, like not like the bass guitar, yeah. not the drums, like but just like, something gentle.
It sounds like just old fashioned grooming.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Wouldn't lads love nowadays they could just for send sure. off a young woman?
It was all about the grooming, because she went off now for the year and, you know, she learned the etiquette, blah, blah, blah. But she also learned a musical instrument called the harpsichord. Not 100% sure what that is. Please get in touch if you do know what it is. And then she also worked on her singing voice. She was supposed to have a lovely singing voice. So she came back age 17. Lord Sandwich at this stage of his career was at the height of aristocracy, but that's not to say he had a respected record necessarily. So he was respected in some ways, but a massive, I suppose, stain on his CV was the fact that he'd obviously been involved in the British response to the American War of Independence, the American Revolution. And of course, as we all know, Britain essentially failed in that. Like, it was a massive failure for Britain. And this was definitely like a stain on his reputation, because he was very much involved and the whole thing had been a disaster. So that's just, you know, as an aside. He was also an active member of the so-called Hellfire Club, which was also known as the Monks of Medmenham, which was like this gentleman's club, really popular with the aristocracy and even royalty, and renowned for, quote, hard drinking and womanizing habits of wealthy rakes. So like just, you know, basically going on the lash and doing the dog in it. And they refer to this as like a gentleman's club. So when she was 17, Martha came back from France and she officially became Lord Sandwich's mistress. So as you said, the previous year, she had essentially just been groomed essentially to become his partner. Far from having a secret affair with Martha, he actually brought her to the family home. So he brought her into the family home at Hitchingbrook in, now I hope I'm pronouncing this right, in Huntingdonshire. He wanted Martha to be his wife in everything but name, a position that would have suited her, no doubt. But of course, he couldn't actually marry Martha, as divorce in those days was really expensive and would have been seriously damaging to his reputation and his high level career.
I'm surprised as an Englishman that that would be damaging, because sure, that's after Henry VIII married like eight women.
Oh, very true. Yeah.
So I'm surprised that it wouldn't
be. I guess it was probably still a bit taboo though. Was it?
Maybe it was only okay if you were a king.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, no, it's funny. I suppose it was probably still a bit taboo, but also maybe he just wasn't that arsed in getting married again.
Yeah, maybe he just wanted to have her on, like, he wanted his cake and eat it too.
Yeah, because they did, the funny thing about these two is they did seem to, you know, obviously she was so much younger than him. There was a massive imbalance of power. But by all accounts, it seemed like they were actually quite happy as a unit, because Martha, she lived the life of a lady. She entertained friends. They were very social. They were like very, very popular and well known. She slotted nicely into the grand lifestyle. Like, she didn't have the legal status of wife, but the social circle seemed to like accept her, and there was no snobbery or anything like that. Now, maybe, you know, there, it might have been like, it mightn't have been overt snobbery, but it seemed like she really did slot in and people accepted her. She had five children with Lord Sandwich.
Oh,
so they went
all
on
out
to
wedlock.
Yeah, well, this is it. So what's interesting about this case, and I was quite heartened by it, is that like the kids, they were out of wedlock, but they were treated very well. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, nice to hear that like they weren't, you know, treated differently from his legitimate kids. And I use that word in inverted commas, because obviously at the time the term would have been like illegitimate. So
and maybe there was a bit of like a respect to his actual, like his mentally unwell. So maybe if she was mentally unwell wife, maybe there was
she, 100%. Like, I mean, you know, she could have been. And it did seem like they seemed to get on very well, and it seemed to be a happy arrangement for everyone involved. Not at all.
And of course it just acted up while we're, but what would you say you it seemed to be?
No, just as in that it seemed to be a pretty happy arrangement by all accounts. So there was one major worry, of course, which bothered Martha. Lord Sandwich, he was a lot older than her, obviously. if he died before her, which of course was likely, she would probably be kicked out of the gaff and have nothing.
That'd be off. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. If he had a freak accent as well.
She was very vulnerable. Yeah. I mean, she was very, very vulnerable. And obviously her kids as well would have been vulnerable and probably would have been left without any money. So she was understandably worried and even told Lord Sandwich that she could get into acting as kind of a side hustle in order to make her own living. Of course, Lord Sandwich was old school, which during this era was just called school.
Yeah.
Like that he was just like, he was not of the opinion that his wife should go off doing her own thing and, you know, making her own money.
Can I say something as a side note? You know the way like there's all these like you'll see these kind of incel-y or angry men on the internet and they're like, you know, women, because some guy commented on my thing and basically women shouldn't be allowed to vote, which was funny.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I can't actually vote.
I agree with him.
But yeah. But the thing is that now thinking about it, sure, they were living the life of Mary back in the day.
Course.
These guys are probably looking, reading back these history things and being like, I could tell my wife what to do. Oh, God, Leland would hate that, though, because when I'm like, I can't decide on a restaurant, he wouldn't want to have to tell me what to do with my life.
I can't imagine anything worse than having to be the authority for even myself.
Yeah.
I hate being the driving seat of my own life, let alone like giving somebody else directions. So yeah, like, look, this guy, exactly that. It was a time when obviously misogyny was rife, etc. He was not up for his wife getting, well, his effective wife getting on stage. So he thought like it was kind of a bawdy profession. Anything to do with the arts was kind of considered a bit bawdy. And he also refused to divorce his wife, even though she had that old chestnut, Katie. When the ex has been declared insane, but he still won't divorce her.
I know, like, Jesus, like, talk about having to, you know, you'd be kind of like, oh, God, he's texting or calling his ex. But this guy's like, she's living in the basement.
Oh, yeah, complete mad woman in the attic stuff. Like, She was just in the West Wing.
She was in the West Wing.
Yeah. So she
was. Is this where Jane Eyre or one of them, Jane Austen, got that?
Jane Eyre with the mad woman in the attic.
Wuthering Heights.
Well, no,
I was about to sing the Kate Bush song.
Jane Eyre, where there's the mad woman in the attic.
But it's like she's actually not mad.
You know what? That could actually have been the inspiration behind this. I didn't find any evidence that that was the case. But like, I definitely, as I was researching this, I kept thinking back to that mad woman in the attic element, and I was like, I mean, because this would have been a really well known case.
Yeah.
So maybe. You know, I don't know, maybe it was kind of the inspiration behind it. It's definitely very, it definitely has overtones. Yeah. So then one day came along, this is when things get very interesting. In 1775, this soldier called Captain James Hackman came to visit. So he came to the Sandwiches and just popped over for a sandwich.
Wait, sorry, is his last name Sandwich again?
So Lord Sandwich is
John. His name is Sandwich.
So John Montagu was his name, but he was like the Lord of Sandwich. So, you know, for example, like, you know, with the aristocracy, they would have these titles.
But
so,
I mean,
for example, like Princess of Wales, that kind of thing.
Oh, Sandwich was a place.
Yes.
Oh, so that makes sense now to
I think it came from, so Sandwich, it came from, I think, like, as in essentially a shire. So like that, You know, when you kind of go back to like the feudal system, etc. And they had like these different titles. So he was the Lord of Sandwich, but his name was John Montagu.
Could you imagine being the Lord of Coca-Cola or like the Lord of Tea or the Lord of Potato?
Well, I think Sandwich is a pretty impressive, because everyone, I love a sandwich.
A sandwich is, that's how I live.
Oh, I mean, that's how
that's
we
what
all
I eat
live.
For dinner.
thank you, John Montague. Or should we say thank you to his poor servants who, like, can you imagine the chef had cooked up this amazing dinner and that fecker couldn't be arsed getting off his gaming table to eat his feckin' dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still gets the credit for inventing this sandwich. But anyway.
Yeah, it was the chef.
He was the chef. So James Hackman, he had joined the army at 19 and he was in the county on a recruiting drive. He was invited to Hitchingbrook, which of course was the gaff that John Montague lived in with Martha.
So this is a new guy into the story.
This is a new guy. He was a soldier. He was a younger fella. He came to the house and he was instantly obsessed with Martha. Martha was 7 years older than him and it was just like he... was besotted. Absolutely besotted. Yes. Jinx. What's... No, that's not jinx. What's the word
I
you use?
I don't know, but unjinx it or I won't be able to talk to
unjinx. But what do you say when we say the snap? Snap.
Snap. Okay. I have no idea.
So he knew, of course, that she was the mistress of the Earl.
Sandwich.
Okay, Lord Sandwich. And that she had five children with him. But nonetheless, he asked her to marry him, even though he knew that she was very much shacked up. She turned him down, pledging loyalty to Lord Sandwich and saying that she would never marry a soldier. So she kind of, I guess...
gave a bit of shade.
A bit snobby about it. You know, she was
forgot
just like,
where she came from.
Well, I mean, sure, isn't that often the case? That, yes. Like, oftentimes I feel, you know, somebody... It's probably stemming from insecurity, but, you know, the people who kind of come up... you know, maybe from a lower class and they're suddenly kind of cast into this really aristocratic world and it's very wealthy, very privileged. Like they have such a fear of going back to where they were.
You know, you see it in comedy as well, like comedians who are like doing better or like at a higher level. But you can tell it's a bit of an insecurity because they'll kind of turn their nose up at younger comics coming in and not be polite or like give shade. And it's like... That was you. I always try to
it's
be...
It's a fear. It's just coming out of the stem.
I always try to make, especially at the club, if there's like newer, like make them feel comfortable. There was like a younger comic recently kind of hanging at the bar. And I was like, come on into the green room with us. And I thought it was being nice. But then actually, I think I just put that comic into like a hell pack because we were all talking, having the crack. And they looked like they just wanted...
I know.
I think they just were so uncomfortable where I was kind of like, come on. It's fine, but then they were kind of like, ah.
Katie Boyle strikes again.
They're trying to be nice.
I know. But you know what? I think your intention was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that the more they nice also should do inclusive. That. They should go into the green room more and get comfortable.
Of course, because the more you do it, the more comfortable you
get. Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
And everybody in that room was not, they would have been nice and
Yeah.
But I can see how, But yes, yeah, so that's just funny that that's in like all aspects of life where people forget.
And Martha was just like, look, you know, the reason I won't marry you is because you're a soldier. Like, there's no way I'm trading down, basically. Yeah. And
she's not trading down, though. She's also getting another 20 years with her partner.
Well, yes. And also he was offering her some security in that he was like, I will marry you. Yeah. And she had like the five kids and he was like, it's no problem. I will marry you. But... She was like, no way, it's not happening. James, unfortunately for him, he obviously was Deva at this. He went off and he didn't give up, though, on Martha. And he decided that he wanted her to be his wife so badly that he went off and decided, okay, I'm going to get a new career. And he joined the church to become a reverend. So he was like, I'm going to get an honourable, inverted commas, career and then she'll marry me. So once he was ordained a reverend in 1779, so 4 years later, he was sent to Norfolk. And again, he proposed to Martha, who again turned him down.
Jesus, this lad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just getting to the stage like, you know... I think you can only propose to a person so many times.
I mean, before you have to get the message. No did not mean no to men. Like, well, we spent centuries being like, no means no.
I know, that's true. And the penny hasn't dropped with a lot of people out there. There's still a lot of guys who have yet to learn that one. So 4 years later, after meeting Martha, James was still obsessed, unable to take no for an answer, and he decided to take... very extreme action.
He's obsessive.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not romantic. I know you were initially thinking like Love Actually, but which in itself is a really unsettling film. But exactly similar to Love Actually, where you're like, oh, okay, this is cute. And then maybe about 20 minutes in, you're like, this is so creepy. This is when it gets really creepy.
Wait, what happened in Love Actually that was creepy?
You know, Andrew Lloyd's character turns up on the doorstep and he's like obsessed with his best mate's wife.
I always thought that was strange that she kissed him.
The boundaries are so bad.
Yeah, yeah. No, 100%.
So there's definitely a whack of this now off it, because basically off the whole thing, because he then travelled to London to try to persuade her to meet him. He sent a note to her friends. So she had these friends, Senor and Senora Galli, to Martha. So she had these Spanish friends. He gave them a note and said, please give it to Martha. In the note, he begged her to meet him for only 5 minutes.
Oh God, no, don't do it, Martha.
Later, he would say he never intended to harm her, which may or may not be true. But in any event, Martha refused to meet him. And she wrote a note back, which the maids passed on to him, saying, look, please just leave me alone. Which is very clear.
Lady, yeah.
Yeah, very clear. At this point, then, it would appear that James intended to end his life. OK, so he really took this very badly, because at that point he'd written a letter to his brother-in-law saying, quote, may heaven protect my beloved woman and forgive this act which alone could release me from a world of misery I have long endured.
Sorry, they're very dramatic back in the day. He probably hasn't even kissed her.
This is the question. So he, on the evening of the 7th of April, 1779, which was a Wednesday, Martha Ray went to Covent Garden Theatre to see the play Love in a Village. That same evening, James was seen drinking brandy in the nearby Bedford Cafe Tavern. Around 11 o'clock, she left in the company of her friend Senora Galli, and both women were escorted by Lord Coleraine. James was among the crowd in this theatre watching Martha the whole time. So apparently witnesses said that Martha took the arm of an unknown man when she was going to get into her coach. So she just kind of took the arm of this guy.
What does that mean, took the arm?
There's... like as in, you know, when you link arms with someone.
But like, so she knew she was linking arms with him.
Oh yeah, like she kind of just like linked arms with this guy momentarily when she was just kind of steadying herself exiting the theatre.
Oh, right.
And this was considered, presumed to be like the tipping point for crazed James. As Martha prepared
because it was just a random guy and he just thought, yes. Oh, he's another guy. Oh,
so
he's mental.
So as Martha prepared to step into her waiting carriage, wait for it, he shot her in the head, killing her instantly. But James wasn't finished, for he carried another pistol. So he had two guns on him. Took out the other gun, which he pointed to his own head in an apparent attempt to shoot himself. But basically, the crowd immediately lunged at James and they wrestled the gun off him. So when he went to shoot himself, the bullet actually just kind of just glanced off him a bit and it wounded him. He only got a very superficial wound because the crowd were wrestling the gun off him. As he fell to the ground, he struck himself repeatedly with the butt of the gun, whereupon he was seized and handed over to the police.
Now, sorry, this isn't just that was too much, because he brought two guns. That's so premeditated.
Well, this is this was a big issue in the trials. So Lord Sandwich was at home. The driver of the coach returned home without Martha and he told Lord Sandwich the news. And apparently his response was, I could have borne anything but this. So there did seem to be like real love between the two of them.
I mean, he should have just fucking married her and this would have never happened.
Yeah. So 1 week
even
later...
Even not his fault, it's James, young guy, right? Fucking crazed.
So 1 week later, Martha was buried, and 4 days after that, James Hackman, still only 27, he was only a young fella, stood trial at the Old Bailey for her murder. Incredibly, despite multiple witnesses and a lot of evidence against him, like the fact that he brought two guns, there was letters suggesting that he was obsessed with Martha, he wasn't taking no for an answer, he pleaded not guilty.
Of course he did. Because, you know, it'd be different if he shot a man.
Classic straight white male privilege here.
Also as well, classic, if I want something, I should have something.
Yeah,
I should
for
have
sure.
It.
Entitlement.
And like, oh no, you guys are crazy for not thinking that I shouldn't shoot her in the head for not loving me.
So not surprisingly, the court was jammers, like absolutely rammed full of people. There was huge interest in this case, clearly, because it was, you know, it had a lot of fascinating aspects. There was scandal, all the rest. James's defence team argued that Martha and James had in fact been meeting in secret and engaged in an affair.
No.
So his defence, argued that they'd been meeting up, they had an affair, which, by the way, like, I'm sorry, that still wouldn't justify what he did. In his statement, James told the court, quote, "I stand here the most wretched of human beings and confess myself a criminal to a high degree. I acknowledge that my determination against my own life was formal and complete. The will to destroy her who was dearer to me than life was never mine until a momentary frenzy overcame me." No. So he insisted that he only intended to kill himself and that he shot Martha in like a momentary frenzy.
Oh, so is he going to put both the guns up to either side head?
Well, this is
it. Like an X,
so obviously the big question was, if he intended on taking only his own life, why the two guns?
Yeah. Absolutely. Sorry, was he afraid that it'd go in through his head and he'd have to go, oh, need another one?
Well, it's funny because people said, like, maybe it was because, you know, if he missed the first time, that he had a second gun. And hilariously, he did actually end up missing his own head because people wrestled the gun off him. So, like, you know, pretty bad attempt. The jury then didn't even bother to deliberate. They found him guilty of murder and James was sentenced to hanging in 3 days' time.
Oh, good. Because
they didn't
Great.
Wait around. Yeah.
Good.
Now, interestingly, Lord Sandwich did something then which was really unexpected. This is really now like, whoa. He sent James a message to his prison cell saying that he forgave him even though he had, quote, robbed him of all the comfort in the world.
So is that some sort of 1700s therapy? Maybe he'd gone to,
yeah,
like,
I mean, it sounds like kind of restorative justice.
Yeah, you need to, like, forgive before he dies.
I mean, it is kind of impressive.
That's kind of Christian or whatever.
For sure. And I do actually think it kind of, I actually think it's complimentary of his character. You know, the fact that he was quite obviously, by all accounts, he was very much devastated by the loss of Martha. But also he told this guy, look, I forgive you.
Well, also, he might be religious. Maybe that's why he didn't want to get divorced. And then sending this, I forgive you, before they...
Oh,
like,
maybe.
That's a very religious thing. Like, if for you to move on, you must forgive people's
sins. That's actually very true.
They'll deal with it when they meet their maker or whatever.
I think you're onto something. Actually, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially since he didn't want to get divorced.
The story checks out. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Lord Sandwich also said, so this again points to the fact that he must have been religious. He also said that he would use his influence to stop the hanging because he didn't believe he should be hanged. But James said he didn't want to live and that he wanted to die. So 3 days later, the hanging went ahead. Lord Sandwich raised his children with Martha. I should say as well, at the hanging, of course, there was a massive crowd, like huge gathering, etc. Lord Sandwich raised his children with Martha and made financial provisions for them to be looked after his death, a level of care sadly not extended to many children born out of wedlock in those days. And that is the tragic story of Martha Ray, aka Martha Heslop.
Yeah, she was only probably, what, 35, 7 years older than him?
She was 7 years older than him, so I'm doing the math. She would have been 35, 36 at the time of her death, the poor woman.
And then as well, the thing with the guy wanting to be hanged, obviously I don't believe in, being killed, because what if you didn't do it? Do you know what I mean? Or what's it called? Death. But like, imagine having to, death probably was an easier option for him than having to live in the jails for forever back then.
Oh yeah.
Oh, God, well,
they just didn't do.
I mean, look,
if you killed someone back then, you were just getting executed. Yeah. That was just what
that
happened.
Yeah.
So what is the lesson we have gleaned? Is there anything, because I know like the shift is all about relationships. Is there anything we can take from the story?
It's a sad one, because I do think, unfortunately, when someone puts their sights on you, and that happens today as well, and you can say, no, I'm not interested, go away, no, thank you. You kind of just have to hope that they won't kill you. Like, it just comes back to the whole being a woman thing. It can be when someone digs their nails in. I think the moral of the story is, men, please go to therapy. and you're not owed anything. You don't deserve anything. And if someone's not interested, don't go change your job, change your looks, change it. Go and like work on your actual mental and go on a dating app and meet someone else, like, do you know.
I think it is just about respecting what the other person is saying to you, isn't it?
Yeah, and just no means no. Like, it's hard because there's that whole thing of coy, and my friend was just saying about how that there's like this weird cult called like honey badgers, and she was saying about how that they tell you, like, when you're in this like weird cult thing, I don't really understand it completely, but that
is this like twin flame
twin flame, that thing. Yeah, don't take no for don't take no for an answer. Keep pushing.
Really dangerous really to be dangerous. Saying this to people. Yeah, who are obviously feeling vulnerable. They're rejected. And like they have somebody in the ear saying you should keep pushing. That's exactly what you should not do.
100%. You have to just let go, move on. And like I think about like me and Leland is the healthiest relationship I ever had. But every guy like that I had ended with before was like, you know, I dated a guy in Ireland who would like wait for me outside work drunk and say this stuff like and kind of like badger me to get back. Like literally honey badger so funny because he would badger me to get back with him and just would not fucking leave me alone. And then do all this like really toxic stuff. And then over here, any guy I kind of broke up with, like that I was like in an intense relationship with, like definitely took no for, would not take no for an answer.
Wow.
And I just think about how with Leland, everything was like so smooth sailing. And if I was like, and I have a joke about it where I'm like, when we first fought and I was like, oh, I need space. And he was like, yeah, I respect that. And my mind is blown because I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Why would you? So like, I know.
But it's like, I have that joke about, oh, sorry, finish. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say, if I were to say to Leland now and we're in love and we're together and we live together and I said, look, this is actually, I've changed my mind. This isn't working for me. I want to be single. I want to be alone. I'm not built for a relationship. He'd be upset, but he wouldn't fucking... He'd be like, all right, like, I'm so sorry to hear that. And like, I thought we were going to be together forever. But then he'd let me go. And it's like, I think people like the whole like, oh, you'd do anything for me. You'd possess me. You'd die for me. And that's the type of person you don't want to fucking be with because that ends up like really unhealthy.
That level
unhealthy.
Of intensity is toxic. And
so toxic.
Ultimately, no means no. If somebody rejects you, you have to respect that. And like no good is going to come from persistently hounding someone. That is going to have the opposite effect. You're going to wear them down. But also, like, if you're sitting there, you've composed a WhatsApp, the fingers hovering, should I send it, should I not? If that person has said to you, I don't want to be with you, trust that.
Listen to them.
Yeah.
Listen to what they're saying.
It's funny, though, you talk about, like, the whole toxic masculinity thing, because I was saying before about, like, obviously Will Smith getting cancelled after the Oscars and... you know, boxing Chris Rock. And I remember that week, I think because I was just in the midst of my Britney show, which looks at like naughty's misogyny, I was just really riled up about this. I think an awful lot of women were, you know, like we were all like just really riled up. And I remember saying to Fred, like, this is absolutely disgusting. Like, I don't care what somebody says about your wife. Like, you can't lay your hands on another human being. It's just completely unacceptable. And I was saying to Fred, I was like, you wouldn't do that, would you? Like, you know, if Chris Rock insulted me, like you wouldn't go up there and box him in the face. And Fred was like, Julia, I absolutely promised I would never do it. And I was like, why the hell not?
Yeah, that feels like such a crap. Yeah.
Yeah. Why the hell not?
Yeah. How dare you not defend me?
So look, that's what it's like being married to me. That is the story of Martha Ray / Heslop. It's a great old story, isn't it, Katie?
It's a brilliant story. And what I really like about it is, and I truly think it, like, obviously there's evidence that they weren't having an affair. She was like, leave me alone, I'm not interested. I think I was thinking, oh, she's going to want to run off with this young lad, and it's the James guy who killed, or not the James guy, the Earl of Sandwich who kills her. That's what I was thinking. That's where it was going.
Yes. Well, you see, because generally speaking with these stories, you know, older man, you know, maybe kind of territorial, possessive, controlling, like these are stories we're very familiar with. So to hear about this young gun, pardon the pun, rocking up, and he's the one ultimately to end her life, like, it's just, and also it is just terrifying to think, like, her taking the arm of a guy as he's helping her into her carriage was supposedly what tipped him over the edge. And there is layered misogyny to that as well, because obviously the intuition being like what they're kind of intuiting there is like, oh yeah, he had a motive, this, you know, like, no, sorry,
it's not even, yeah, it's,
he's, yeah, crazy,
totally crazy, because not even her non-husband would be reacting about that. The other thing too is she could have left her husband, had security, been in a marriage, probably could have went off and done acting, which shows she really did love her. So when I say husband, her non-husband, she really, yeah, did love the sandwich guy, because she could...
Wouldn't we all love a sandwich guy?
I know, yeah, because she could have fecked off with your man and kind of did her own thing with her kids. And yeah, it's just really sad.
How, I think it's good to wrap up the project on that high energy moment.
Wait, no, I know. Remember when I said, oh, people forget where they come from, but now, mm-hmm, seeing how crazy he was, I think what she did was, a lot of the time what women will do is they'll say, oh no, I actually don't date short men, or I actually don't date men from Ireland, or I don't, you know, you're trying to like soften the blow.
Yeah, and then
the men get really annoyed about this and be like, well, I can put on a New Yorker accent, when really it's like, I just don't fucking like it.
That is so true.
We're so afraid to say, I actually don't like it, I'm just not interested, because you don't want to hurt their feelings.
We say, you're spot on. I've just broken up with someone, I'm not looking for a relationship.
You say you're seeing someone when you're not seeing someone.
Yeah, all the time.
So we're so worried about your ego, and it's so fragile. And I say that's why she said, oh no, I would never be with a soldier. Not fucking thinking he'd go get another job.
You're so smart. Yeah. I think you've got it in one.
And if she had have just in the first time said, look, no, I just don't want to be with you at all, he could have snapped then. It's a fucking minefield.
I think what you said there, the fragility of the male ego, chef's kiss. That just sums up the whole podcast.
Yeah. And I know a lot of men who are probably listening to both of our podcasts don't feel that way, because they're just great and they're listening to women already. So they're like, yeah.
They are. Do you know what? Recently I discovered that 70% of my listeners are men.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
So I think I'm a bit of a babe, am I?
Yeah. I'm like 50-50. I'm 50-50 men.
So
women.
Listen, we do love the men. Like, we don't love this fella, James, but you know, like,
oh,
we
I
do.
Love
yeah.
men. Oh my God. Yeah, we do, my life course. Was obsessed with men for a long time.
Well, listen, but not obsessed in a, I'm going to go off and become a reverend and meet you at the theatre with two guns.
No, I wasn't
going to
kill
anybody. A healthy obsession.
I was always dating. They're always on my mind.
A healthy obsession.
Let's see. So we should round this off at follow Julie at Julie J Comedy.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yes, and follow Katie at Katie Boyle Comedy.
Thank you. No, Katie Boyle Comic.
Oh, excuse me.
And then I have the video of this. It'll be on the Patreon. I'll send you the video file. You can do whatever you want with it. And then it'll be on Crimeland and on The Shift.
Thank you so much, Katie. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great.
I won't pretend to say goodbye to you because I am sitting on your couch and I'm staying here tonight. Yes. But let's just pretend it's a farewell.
Goodbye. Love you all.
Lovely to meet you.
Bye. To meet me. Bye.